Greetings. Welcome to Confessing the Blues. I'm your host, Jim Ange Anderson. On today's show, we feature a very old friend of mine, the triple threat of guitarist, singer, harmonica player, Waylon Ray. Let's roll. Waylon Ray, welcome to the Farmhouse Studios.
Hey, glad to be here, brother.
You know, I was thinking, it's been a long time. I've known you for a long time. And I thought it was Maggie's on 123rd and Ashland.
We're famous for nothing. That was our logo.
And I was playing with Johnny Twist, and you were doing the Off the Wall band at that time. When do you think that was?
It was me and Bobby Valentine, and I think Matt Zeller was playing bass, and Fleetwood Al Klepek on a guitar.
Probably that all sounds familiar.
Memory serves me well, which is amazing.
This was probably the late 70s or early 80s?
Yeah, I imagine. Yeah. Well, let's see. I got out of service in 76, so must have been like 78 maybe.
Something like that.
It's 79.
And so after the service, you just started playing the blues around
the
neighborhood?
Yeah, you know what? When I was in the service, man, you know, it was very life-changing thing happened. I mean, one very profound life-changing thing. See, we had what we called the Enlisted Men's Club, okay? And they were there at every, you know, military installation, both home and abroad, right? And what it is you get all these 19, 20-year-old whatever from wherever, you know, GIs, all in one place. And back then, it wasn't so where it was integrated with women's and that. You know, I mean, there were some women, but they were working girls mostly.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it was a different thing. But anyway, I used to haunt all the YAM clubs, and we had this one joint. It must have held like 2,000 people, right? So everybody's in there, you're having a good old time, and there was a band, you know, naturally, and the band was playing all the popular tunes of the day that are on the AM radio and whatever. But, you know, they just looked kind of like hippies and stuff. They were, like, from England, you know, and they had, like, hair and stuff. So nice equipment, nice Fender amps and stuff, you know. So I walked up, and I go, "You guys know any blues, maybe?" And they go, "Blues? Yeah. Eric Clapton? Yeah, Chicago Blues? Yeah, we got that." So proceeded to say, "Can I play harp with you guys?" And they go, "Oh, yeah, that's no problem. What's your name?" I says, "Oh, Ray." I wasn't Waylon Ray back then.
All right.
It was just Ray, you know. So I whooped out the harp, jumped on the stage, and it was just like somebody had a magic wand. It was like more like a magic licking stick instead of a harmonica, because it literally transformed the crowd from a bunch of who cares, look the other way, keep doing what you're doing, GIs, to a bunch of cats. It was like a scene from the Blues Brothers movie, man, when they're in the Joliet prison. Everybody's like dancing on the tables. That's exactly what it was like. You know, so I'm thinking, man, this harp is like electrified, you know. Yeah, this is going to be my ticket right here. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I had always played since I was 12, and I was probably about 18 at the time, you know. But, I was into it, man. You know, listen to all the great guys, you know, Sonny Boy Williamson, Paul Butterfield, some of my biggest early influences. So, you know, I figured, you know, hey, man, this is like magic. You know, I could turn all these jamokes into like active participants in real musical event here, you know. So, 1, 2, 1, 2, 3. Thank you. Couldn't wait to get out of service and get back to Chicago, which is, you know, the home of the blues, right?
Yeah.
So that was my start of my journey. Got out, and man, I just couldn't get up to Kingston Mine fast enough. It used to be on Lincoln Avenue. They had like a skylight. You walk in, there's a skylight, but it wasn't meant to be a skylight. It's just it was a hole in the roof. You know, it was back in, you know, late 70s, 76, 77.
So you started playing around town with some different
guys? Yeah, so I started going up there, and I met a bunch of cats, you know. That's where I first met guys like, you know, Studebaker John, whatever, you know, Hope, whoever was playing at the time, you know.
Right.
Yeah. But it was cool, you know, it was cool. And, yeah, it was nothing to sit in. I mean, you know, not like today, you know. Since that time, though, sometimes I'm, you know, filled with a little bit of apprehension, even discussing the fact that I would just pretty much muscle my way up on stage, you know, because I could play, you know, and I just had this burning thing, burning desire. But, you know, it's not like I would sort of like get the leader of the band off to the side and blow him a few choruses in his ear, you know. They told me, nah, you ain't making it. But nobody ever said that.
Right.
You know, they all said, man, you're getting down. Come on, jump up here, you know, blah, blah. So, you know, it was a beautiful thing. And that started me off. And I met a bunch of cats. But, you know, I never for a minute thought that I should knock on the doors of all the places, the downtown tourist traps, so to speak. You know, the places where people came from all corners of the universe to hear Chicago blues. I thought, you know, I better go down to JT, man. So that's kind of where I cut my teeth, down Maxwell Street, you know, because I used to go down there religiously every Sunday, drunk or sober.
And like who?
You know.
You remember some of the guys you played with?
Yeah, like Pat Rushing, right? And, you know, Queen Sylvia Embry.
Yeah, John was her husband, John Embry. Yeah,
you know, a bunch of cool people, you know. So it was dynamite, you know, going down to JT. come down to Maxwell Street. You know, we used to go there every, and you know, and it was free, except, you know, if the band was grooving, they you know, nowadays they got busking. You need like a $50 permit a year or something, and then you can go play your thing on the street. Well, back then, down Maxwell Street, they would just stop playing. They would just look at the audience like, come on, come on.
Fill up the bucket,
more music?
Right, yeah.
Somebody walk around with a cigar box, you got to feed the kitty, man. You got to put some money on that thing, you know, which is understandable because that's what they did, you know. And believe it or not, to this day, you can still make a better buck working it like that than you can in a club. Because people in a club somehow think that money must... You must have a money tree out in your truck or something. You know what I mean? You know,
they don't mind paying for a drink, but they don't want to pay the band.
You know, because it's like, oh well, we thought the music was like complimentary.
Yeah,
which like, it ain't.
Yeah,
people gotta live, right? You know, so that's all I gotta say.
So the time down on Maxwell Street, I mean, you already had some experience playing. I mean, what do you think you walked away from? What did you learn from playing down at Maxwell Street?
Maxwell Street? Oh, a whole bunch of useful things. You know, like you don't need no fancy PA system to get on down with it. All you need is old raggedy two-channel Fender amplifier, and you can plug the guitar and the vocals.
Right.
And the harmonica.
Right.
And the bass or whatever you got. You know what I mean? So it's a beautiful thing. You know, it was like I think they paid like $2 to somebody to draw a an extension cord out the window.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, you see the orange extension cord going down the street. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Get like a 6-way gang plug and just start plugging stuff in and going to town. Guys like Playboy Vents and, a lot of cats used to hang down there. But it was an education, you know, some good players and blah, blah, blah. And I actually got hired off of there a few times to go to other clubs on like the west side and south side. But everybody was pretty hammered by that time. You know what I mean? You go down there
early in the
and
morning.
And you start at 6 o'clock in the morning. By 2 o'clock in the afternoon, you're kind of like, yeah, maybe I should go home and go to bed. No, we got a gig, man. Them cats were ready to go. You know? So one time I come out of my coma, and I realized, I said, man, this club looks really nice. I mean, it's like red velvet everywhere and, you know, mirrors everywhere, you know, on the ceiling, on the walls. I'm like, man, what's the name of this place? Robert Show Lounge.
Oh, 63rd really? Street, right?
No, it's across the street from Cabrini Green, man.
All right.
Yeah, you walk out the front door and just look up, there's Cabrini Green.
Yeah.
Oh, damn, I forgot my bulletproof underwear. but you know, it was all good. You know, you get guys like, you know, BB Odom and,
right,
you know, cats like that. You know, they come through and whatever. But, yeah, that was cool. But, see, I never, like I was saying before, I never once intended on trying to beat the name characters, you know, the big name players, you know, to beat their time. Because, you know, I worked the other side of the street, you know what I'm saying? But not busking so much. I was looking for gigs, you know. But I figured, man, rather than try to play, you know, at the Kingston Mine or something like that, you know, a mecca, if you will, you know what I mean? I will just create my own places. That's where, you know, we talk about places like Froggy's, places like Maggie's, you know. Places like Krabby Annie's, places like, you know, all the joints that we played on the south side. We made that stuff happen. You know, there was nothing there before we started doing it. You know? I hooked up with Mike Gibb, who was like a sideman for multiple cats. You know, he was a very influential cat, very talented. He played with the Sun Seals band for a while. And, you know, he did great with them.
But he was always kind of like regulated sideman thing. I mean, he was always ready to play, you know, but he needed his own thing. So he got the home record thing going.
And it was kind of magical. When I met him, I didn't even know he played guitar. I thought he played, thought he was a piano player.
Right.
That's where
he's
I met him.
Yeah.
He was playing piano. They had a big grand piano set up at this place called Conley's. It used to be on like 86th.
I remember
Kedzie.
Conley's. Yeah.
Kedzie, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, so, yeah, you know, I walked in there and there was this dude grinning to me and I was grinning to him and we didn't mic nothing, just me playing the acoustic harmonica and him playing piano and the whole place just shut up and people gathered around the piano and everybody was digging it. Next thing we know, we got us a band.
Right.
You know, and we started playing at places. We've played at this one guy's joint. I think it was called the 19th Hole or something. It's across the street from the northeast corner of Market Park. It was right across the street next to 7-Eleven. We first started playing there, there was like four people in the crowd. Next night we played there again, there's 40 people in the place. Next night we played there, you had to take a run and start at the door to get in, you know, and they'd fly and leaf just to get in the joint.
So Michael had transferred to guitar at this point, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And who else did you have? Jimmy Kenny?
Well, Jimmy Kenny, Bobby Valentine on the drums, uh-huh. You know, all good players looking for a place to play. And it was just, you know, that was just, it was infectious. You know, everywhere we played, we didn't have to go to the north side, knock on doors with our hats in our hands. You know, we were kicking butt, taking names.
You created your own scene on the south side.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
And that's the way to do it. For all you kids out there, right. That's the way to do it.
Yeah. I mean, but going back to Sun Seals, I remember seeing Mike with Sun Seals. And I remember the whole band moving back and forth, grooving. I mean, what a tight band.
Yeah,
Snapper
Mitchum.
Yeah, Snapper, you know, and I remember talking to Mike and thinking when I grow up I want to be like him, you know.
Yeah.
Playing behind a big name artist and having the time of his life.
Mm-hmm.
But he graduated from that and started his own group.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he deserved his own
group. The home records. And unfortunately
yeah,
we just,
I've seen Sun Seals multiple times and you know what? God bless Sun Seals and everything else. I've seen a lot of cats.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I sat in with all kind of people and most of them were very, very welcoming. I remember playing with Mighty Joe Young.
Yeah.
Just some little off-the-wall joint and near Joliet somewhere. Don't even ask me where it was, you know what I mean? But we happened in there, and, yeah, my Joe Young was up there playing. So I did my thing, you know, blow a little harper in his ear, and he's just like all smiles and stuff. Come on up. Yeah, get you up, man, you know. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Thank you.
So that was, you know, that was the way I just, that's the way I was rolling back in them days, you know, just trying to get out there, trying to get up there. And it was all good because it was a lot of love, you know. It wasn't about money, nothing like that.
Right.
You know, people today are too hung up on the monetary end of things, you know. And number one, most of you people worried about it don't even qualify. You ain't paid no dues, baby. You ain't paying enough dues to be talking about money.
Right.
You know
right.
what I mean? Okay, so forget that. You know, but that's just me talking.
But you started because you're into the music, the passion of the music, mm-hmm. loving the music. Right. And now you're out on the scene and you're playing with, you know.
I kind of semi-retired. But at one point, you know, when I was with Gibb, see, that's beautiful. We made our own places to play, and then we were the house band. It's like, oh, we're pretty good. We're rolling in. The place is packed. Don't go nowhere. Are you free Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday? How about Sunday?
Yeah.
You know,
those are the days, 5 nights in a row.
I'm not kidding you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You know, either that or we had like maybe four. All you need was four joints. Four joints where you're the house band for 2-3 nights a week, and then you pick up some gigs, blah, 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 Wednesday night here, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And then we got every Sunday at the Keys, the Fabulous Keys Show Lounge, who was owned by a piano player. And it was a fabulous joint, really crazy sexy. I mean, crazy, you know, mirrors on the walls.
Yeah, yeah.
Nice raised stage. And they had some of the top shelf jazz guys playing there. And the dude that owned it, Bill, you know, I don't forget his last name, but he was a pretty good piano player himself. And, you know, we played there multiple, every Sunday. And, you know, when we first started playing there, it was like, yeah, it's a sparse little crowd, you know. But then the word got out, and we get all the nurses from all the hospitals, you know, what is it? Little Company of Money mm-hmm. and Christ the King. And What is it? Christ Hospital.
Right.
You know.
95th Street.
Yeah, right. So anyway, all them nurses, male and female, would come by and pack the place, right? And plus, the Drury Lane Theater was there on 95th, you know, right off of Western Avenue. And all them actors, man, they would pour into the place. So, you know, the place is full of people who just got off work, and they're looking to party,
ready
man.
To party,
and
yeah.
It was Sunday, you know what I mean? So, you know, we had a great time. We had a great time there. And then, you know, that kind of – we went right from there, and we met some nice people, these two nice ladies. It was a mother-daughter team, you know, Marlene and Cynthia Schroeder was their daughter. They were nice people. You know, they would do anything for us. They got to be like, you know, following us around, whatever, doing things for us. Well, push come to shove, another couple of months, blah, 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 blah. They got tired of their gigs that they were doing, and they pulled their money together and bought a bar called the Tip On In.
Tip On In, yeah.
The Tip On In, yep. And we put that place on the map.
And you were the first band to play there.
Yeah, yeah, first band to play there.
And they had great entertainment.
Yeah, some top shelf guys.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, guys would come down from the city, and mm-hmm. you know, Southside guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There wasn't no slouch acts. Nobody that stunk, you know, nothing. Not even close. A lot of these guys that call themselves blues cats, they wouldn't have never got a gig there, ever.
So you have some cassette recordings of you performing there.
Mm-hmm.
You got Steve Freund on guitar, yeah. Marty yep. Bender.
Yep, Marty Bender on drums. And I don't want to drop names. They might want money. They might be looking for a check.
Yeah.
Where's my check at, Ray? I heard you say my name on the radio.
You gotta help me, babe, as soon as you can. Help me, babe. Lord, I can't do it by myself. You don't help me, baby. I'm gonna find somebody. Bring me a picture, baby. Turn on your evening gown.
Oh,
like them tapes I was showing you. I mean, that's from, wow, before some of these youngsters was even squirting daddy's eye, you know, right. gleaming daddy's eye. You know, it's that long ago, and all them tapes have stood the test of time because they sound just as fresh and just as dynamic, and the musicianship is at such a level that it could be anybody, and they could be playing any club today that's on the scene. I'm just saying, you know, because it was out of sight, man. No slouches, okay?
Right.
No slouches. No, none, not one.
So the tip on in, I mean, any other highlights? You played there with your own group, and you also mm-hmm. probably played with Mike Gibb and just some other cats.
Yeah, you know, different guys. I mean, there was a wealth of talent that played there, and people would do anything. Oh, geez, I don't even want to talk about some of the stuff that went on in there, but, you know.
Right.
Yeah, it was crazy.
Well, it was the 80s, right?
Yeah, early 80s. Whatever. Yeah. Yeah. But we survived. We survived. Then I went on. I played with Gibb and then blah, 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 whatever. And, you know, for one reason or another, people part their separate ways. You know, this is back in my crazy days, you know. Well, you know, I had a lot of love for the band and for the man, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, they had to let me go because we were playing on Roosevelt Road at the Chicago Outlaws annual hoorah, you know.
Yeah.
You know, and for some reason, I got a little overexcited and picked one of them bikers up over my head and gave him an airplane spin and a toss.
That was the end of that.
Yeah, that was the end of that. Ray, here's your walking papers. We don't need you.
Yeah. Because you don't want to fool around with too much, right?
Hey, man. You know, tell them like a TIS, that's all. Right?
You know, we also have performed with a lot of different, extended, one big musical family. Like mm-hmm. we got our good friend Bruce, we've played with Bruce on bass and Rock's on bass player.
I love me some Bruce Felger, man.
You know,
that's a good dude, right there.
And you know, we were talking about some different guys, Marty Bender and mm-hmm. Bruce
Marty the Party,
Steve Ditzo.
Steve Ditzo could play. He sounds better today than he did ever. You know, he just gets better and better.
How about everybody seems to have a Jody Noah story? How about talk about Jody?
Oh
Noah.
My God, yeah. You can't hardly talk about blues on the South Side of Chicago, and I mentioned Jody Noah's
mm-hmm.
or Eddie Boss, or, you know, some other people. But, Jody was like the mayor of 111th Street, you know. And what an unusual cat. You know, first time I heard him, dig this, he was with Eddie, and I didn't know either one of them cats. But I was into the blues, you know, and whatever. And I was somehow, for some reason, in Chicago Ridge on like a Saturday afternoon, walking around. I was walking. I remember I was walking. And I heard some musical strains coming at me like magic through the air. I was like, I must be hallucinating, auditory hallucination or something. This can't be. I can't be hearing this hip stuff coming, you know, in Chicago Ridge on Southwest Highway Avenue. I'm walking down Southwest Highway Avenue about 100 and whatever it is. So I followed my ears, and there was like a little, it was like a mini biker fest type thing in some guy's backyard or something, you know, right on Southwest Highway, right? And it's Jody and them guys playing. They're playing Crystal Redemptor. You ever hear that song?
Yeah, oh yeah.
That's magic.
Yeah.
That song is freaking magic, man. I'm telling you. It's got this haunting melody line. No vocals or nothing, but, you know, it's just, you know, very, if you're hip to the song, Crystal Redemptor, you know. Charlie Musselwhite played a hell of a version, you know, whatever. But he didn't write it. But still, you know, that was my introduction to them cats, and I just couldn't believe it. And nobody was like Jody Noah, okay? Because me and him were like apples and oranges. Even though I loved the guy, who do you know that plays harmonica backwards and upside down? You know, but that was Jody.
Yeah.
He played it. I mean, how could you do that? Why would it occur to anybody to pick up harmonica and play it
right
upside down and backwards? But that's the way he played. And he played wonderfully. You know, he played very well. I mean, you know, he was my bro.
Yeah.
I mean, no animosity, no...
No competition.
No snake eye, nothing like that. He was my bro.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And we did multiple things together, you know. Because, you know, when he had gigs, he would have a lot of people show up. But, I mean, a lot of them had other motives than to hear good music. So, you know, he'd be taking care of business or whatever. You know, you got to do what you got to do.
Sure.
You know, So
life of a musician is hard.
Yeah, it's hard, right? Yeah, I'm hip to all that. So, you know. But, I mean, he was a character, you know, snappy dresser, always had a different car. Like, every time you see him, he's driving a different car.
How's that happen? You know?
Yeah, how'd that happen? You know.
And I always figured that Junior Wells was
his guy.
Oh,
he was Junior's buddy, man. Yeah. Him and Junior were like, he knew Junior's mama, I think. I heard that story, you know, so there you go, you know. Jody was the kind of guy that would visit your mother in the hospital before you did.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Oh, your mom's sick? He'd be there holding her hand.
Nice.
Wonderful human being.
Yeah. How about Junior Wells? You ever had an experience with Junior?
My one Junior Wells story is that I was at the checkerboard one night when he used to hold court there on Mondays. They had like a jam, you know. And I had this little funky Fender amp. It had a line out, though. You know, it was just like a little champ or some baloney. But it had a line out. So it was pretty powerful. You know, you plug it into the PA and keep walking, right? So I went up there and I'm playing with the guys, the house band or whatever. Anyway, you know, Junior had to sit through multiple boring, redundant, ignorant, stupid, you know, guys who think they could play the harmonica, you know. And probably some of them are still walking around today. You
know? Don't name any names.
Yeah, I'm not going to name any names. But anyway, Junior actually had stopped playing, and he was sitting at the bar. I don't know if he was drinking or not. Probably.
You know.
But anyway, I proceeded to play a couple of hot little numbers, and he walked right up on stage, took my harmonica out of my hand, and stuck it in his mouth and finished the song. Now, a lot of people would take umbrage of that and go, wow, what an insult. But if you think that was insultory, brother, I got news for you. He took notice of me.
Yeah.
He felt the heat from my presence. He felt that there was another cat in the house that could throw down, you know? So he just wanted to show me what. And he didn't care about the crowd. He was showing me. You know, that's it. You know
Let
what
me
I mean?
Finish so this.
Yeah, that's my Junior Wells story.
That's cool.
Okay, there it is.
Yeah. We were talking about Sammy Lawhorn earlier before this interview, and you told me a story about him and Eddie Boss.
Oh, yeah. Well, Eddie Boss was a guy that I met when I got out of service because he was a local kind of like a blues guy. Everybody would like gravitate. Oh, you know Eddie Boss? Yeah, he was playing at some place down in Pullman. I can't remember the name of it. Ah, Jesus Christ. It was just like some little, it was kind of like a restaurant, coffee house. I think maybe they did serve alcohol. But yeah, him and Jody had worked that thing a couple times. But it was just a little hole in the wall. Nothing. It was right off 111th and Langley. So, you know, Eddie Buss was a big, big, huge, gigantic fan of Sammy Lawhorn. And I was always like, you know, okay, guitar, yeah, Freddie King, you know, blah, 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 whatever, you know. Sammy Lawhorn, who's that? Oh, Ray, come on, let's go down Teresa's. So we went down
48th Indiana?
Yeah, wherever it was.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, we went down there, and yeah, there's Sammy. But we went down there a bunch of times, but the one time we was down there, Sammy was playing, and Sammy would go from playing the most inspired, crazy stuff in the world to like just sleeping on his amplifier.
On the bandstand.
Yeah, he would just like pass out on stage. And that was just regular. He would do that like clockwork. It's like, okay, yeah, it's 10 o'clock. Yeah, give him 5 more minutes. Then it'll be nap time. But anyway, I mean, the guy was a great player. But one time I was down there and he was playing and I looked over at Eddie. Eddie goes, come here. He likes tapped me on the shoulder. He says, look, he rolls up his shirt and he's got goosebumps, you know.
From Sammy.
Giant economy size goosebumps on his arm. He goes, and his hair on his arm standing up straight. He goes, look, I told you.
Yeah,
Sammy lit him up. I mean, Sammy was great. I mean,
he was
really,
a guitar player.
Yeah, he could play. No doubt. But the one time I was down there, I figured I'd be, you know, regular guy. You know, I'm a regular guy, Sammy. Yeah, how you doing? I seen you. Yeah, I seen you too. Yeah, I heard you play. Yeah, whatever. Okay, let's do a drink. You know, and they used to sell, like, pints of liquor and stuff behind the bar at Teresa's, you know. So I bought a pint of Old Bumpy. That's that Seagram's gin. It's got like a raised,
right,
raised
bumpy bottle,
bumpy,
yeah,
bottle, you know. So I bought a pint of that, and I opened it up. And I was drinking pretty good them days, you know. I go, here you go, brother, you first. So he turns it up, hands it back with like about a quarter inch of backwash in it. Because, you know, he done sucked it all down in one swallow.
Right.
You know what I mean? Oh, God. So that was my last, first and last time I decided to be generous, you know. But anyway, then he proceeded to get up and play, and then he did his thing again. But, you know, hey.
Well, I heard the story where
Blues ain't for babies.
It's no, no.
We ain't selling Bibles.
Every time Sammy would fall asleep, he'd wake up and just start playing Chicken Shack, no matter what's going on.
Yeah.
You know, so he'd be falling asleep.
But yeah,
you know, so yeah. I'm back, you know.
We actually have a song. We still play it occasionally whenever I get together with Cosgrove, you know, it calls it Sammy's song.
Yeah.
You heard it before.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's where we get that from.
Well, we're all sort of, in some ways, disciples, yeah, of yeah, Sammy and that whole scene.
Mm-hmm. Carrying on the legacy, so to speak.
You know?
Yeah, Johnny studied him, too. You know, Johnny's a hell of a player.
So you were talking about, you know, maybe Albert or Freddie King, and mm-hmm, how about other guys? But I mean, we talked about your harp playing. You're also a great guitar player. So how about who are your inspirations on the harp, first of all?
On the harp?
Yeah.
Well, when I was a little kid, you see, I worked all my life.
Hmm.
I, you know, my dad, God bless his soul, he always had, you know, multiple jobs. At one time, he worked three jobs. You know what I mean? So
yeah,
who does that? Come home, sleep for 2 hours, go back to work at some other place, you know. But, I mean, you know, he made a good living. He made a good buck. If he didn't have seven children, maybe he could have been driving a Mercedes-Benz or
right,
something, you know. And finally, as I got older, I appreciated that, you know, but when I was like 9, 10, something like that, he offered me an opportunity to go to work with him. He used to be like a night crew at this place called Distributors Record Company or something. They would like take albums and load them up, 45s and whatever, send them out to the record shops, you know, this and that. So I was helping him. We were pulling orders and whatever, and I seen this one album cover. I was just staring at it. It was a picture of a derby hat, you know, a derby hat, yeah, and a harmonica. And it said, "The Real Folk Blues." And I was like, man, yeah, that looks awful inviting. Let's see, what is that about? Start reading up on it and stuff, you know, the liner notes. Yeah, it's some cat named Sonny Boy Williamson. You know, so I'm thinking, I'm like 19 years old. So I grabbed it, and actually, it was contemporary at the time. It wasn't,
yeah,
like it was an old
wasn't
album.
Oldie, yeah.
This was like something that just come out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, yeah, I took it home and started listening to that. Man, that was the stuff, you know. Yeah, Sonny Boy Williamson, Rice Miller. Sonny Boy Williamson, too, because it turns out there was two. There was another guy before him, John Lee Anderson or something.
Yeah.
Whatever his name was, Williamson.
But that's what turned you on, yeah, to transform, you know.
Yeah. So, you know, I started playing harp, and then I was looking. You know, you get hungry and blah, blah, blah. You know, one thing I could say is, you know, say what you want about Eric Clapton. I hear a lot of people these days, oh, Eric Clapton is dead, yeah, John Mayall. You know, but back when I was a kid, that was all you had. And God bless John Mayall for one thing, not his singing, not whatever. But the main thing it was about John Mayall, he said on the back of his albums, he would put down what key the songs was in.
Right, that's
you
important
know,
when you
he
start
would
out.
Write down what key the songs were in,
yeah,
okay? So this was a little tidbit of information that was priceless to me because I didn't play guitar or piano or anything like that. I played harmonica. So, you know, rather than pick up 12 different harmonicas and give them all a toot and try to figure out what key it was in, here was this beautiful expressway to, you know, being,
yeah,
able to recreate some of the sounds I was hearing by, you know. So God bless you, John Mayall, if you're out there listening. Thank you. I owe you one.
So how about any other harp players that were, you know, turned you on when you were just starting? Other harp players that you enjoyed?
Well, you know, all of them.
All
know,
of them, yeah.
Pretty much all of
yeah.
them, yeah. Can't, I mean, you know, Slim Harpo, you know, yeah, that's the stuff, and, you know. Anybody that ever worked with Muddy, then I got hip to. Actually, I came upon Little Walter later.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, I think I was actually out of the service already, you know. And a friend from high school said, didn't you ever. He was a classical guitar player. He was taking lessons at DePaul, you know, where you put your foot on the stool and play the big old, you know, the big old guitar, you know.
Nylon string. And
You know, with the nylon strings on that. So he was studying up some serious classical guitar. His name was Mike Labriola. God bless him. I don't know what he's doing now, but...
So how about the guitar? I mean, when I first met you, you're playing harp, and I turn around, you're playing guitar.
Well, I started playing guitar when I was about, I'd say about 19 years old, something like that.
So you'd always been playing it, really.
You know, and and the way I learned how to play guitar is just by listening to records. I mean, this is before the internet and blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there were books available, but, you know, it wasn't so many. Well, if there was, I was ignorant to them. You know, I didn't know that there was instructional books for blues and blah, blah, blah. So basically, I would just listen to radio and listen to, you know, albums that I had. And I would just pick out single note lines and try to emulate them. Number one, your guitar's got to be in tune. That's a given. If your guitar ain't tuned, you're dead.
Forget about it. Yeah.
You know, but with your guitar being in tune, now you can figure out single note things on there and go from there. You know, and that's what I did. You know, even to this day, some of the stuff that I learned way back when is still relevant because, yeah, that's exactly what the guy was doing. You know what I mean? Now, you probably don't know what I mean, but
you pick up the needle and bring it back and start over. What was that?
Yeah, what was that? You know? Yeah, I wore out some records, man, doing that.
So what kind of...
Oh, dig this. And then, you know, it's like after a while, I was a pretty good harmonica player or whatever, right? And then you said, who do I like to listen to? Blah, blah, blah. Well, I don't think I could really talk about harmonica without mentioning Kim Wilson.
All right.
Okay? Okay, so... All of a sudden, nobody hit me to him or nothing. I just seen this crazy-looking album at the record store. It said, Girls Go Wild. And it's got a picture of, you know, these guys in various poses, you know what I mean? And the album cover says, Girls Go Wild. I like that.
Yeah.
That was kind of, you know, okay, let me see what this is about. So I bought the album, took it home, listened to it. I go, man, that guy's a good harmonica player. He reminds me of somebody. Let me think. Yeah, me. You know, honest to God. Because he was playing the same stuff I was playing.
Sure.
You know, he's playing Slim Harpo, he's playing Sonny Boy, he's playing, you know, Howlin' Wolf, you know, same stuff I was playing. So, yeah, did he remind me of somebody? Yeah, he reminded me of me, you know. Okay, so there it is. I said it, you know. But he went on, I mean, you know. Yeah, he's like God on the earth.
He's still playing. He's playing great stuff.
Yeah, he ain't lost nothing. He's actually better than he was before. I hear him doing techniques now that he didn't have back in the, you know, 30, 40 years ago, whatever.
Like a fine wine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's supposed to get better.
Yeah, he's the best. You know, so there you go.
So how about the guitar? I mean, who were you listening to? What records were you listening to learn some?
It's a good question. Let's see. A lot of Jimmy Reed originally, you know. Yeah.
Sure.
And people still ain't got it. There's people that have been listening to Jimmy Reed our whole life, still can't play a lump. You know, okay? I said it. There it is, you know. Because they ain't got no feel, you know.
We were talking about that before, how it's about feel. It's not about looking at tab or looking at computers. It's about sitting down with the guys and playing, right? And it's about feel, having that right feel.
Yeah, and there's this little bit, I don't want to sound crazy or nothing, but there's this little bit of space. It's either right ahead of the note or right behind the note. And if you can't perceive that, then go do something else for a living. Don't play music. Don't play blues especially. Because you're never going to get it, baby. If you can't feel that, you just better hang it up. Okay?
It's not a metronome.
It ain't for you.
You know?
Yeah, metronome don't go there, okay? Metronomes are handy. And everybody should advise them, you know, appropriate one and learn how to use it. But, you know, that's not what I'm talking about. In the blues, you have feels. And certain ones, they're just a little bit behind or a little bit... It's almost like they're pulling you into the next bar or whatever. You know what I mean?
Well, they can talk about, you know, tension and release and
yeah,
all that kind
exactly.
of stuff. So,
you know, a lot of people don't get that. They just play mechanically, and it's so sick. You know?
It's not a mechanical music.
Yeah. Well, tell that to all them people. Whatever, you know. Don't tell me because I get it.
Right.
I do get it.
Yeah. So what do you like these days? What do you like listening to?
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. You know what I like.
Well, we were just
listening
to something downstairs.
What I like, yeah. I like Little George Seraph, number one, my favorite guy right now. Little George Seraph from London, England, sings great, plays harmonica, plays guitar. He's just too much. If you get a chance, anybody out there, listen to some great blues, check out Little George Seraph from London, England. Also, Tommy Lionel. He's in a band called Trick Bag from, I believe they're from Finland, maybe, or... somewhere over there, Norway. But yeah, they're fabulous. And Tommy Lionel is just unbelievably great blues musician. And then, you know, I still listen to all the classics. How do you get tired of listening to Freddie King?
Never.
You got a hole in yourself? You know what I mean? Right. Yeah. You know. Don't get tired of listening to that either, baby. You know, so there you go.
or Slim Harpo, or Magic Sam. You know, man, that's some stuff, you know. Why? Because it's just timeless. It speaks to the human condition. It speaks to the emotions within all of us. It's not about a time or a place. It's about the feel. That's all I can say. You know, I don't know how to put it any other way.
What do you think about the state of the blues today?
Oh, God. Let me give you a little story. There's this one kid in town. Can I mention his name or no? Maybe I shouldn't.
Sure. Well,
I mean, he's a nice kid. He's a young kid. I used to see him. His mom and dad would bring him to clubs, you know. And he's a nice kid. He could play.
Yeah.
But he doesn't play like all the guitar slingers. He plays like the traditional Jimmy Rogers, you know, Luther Tucker, the traditional,
right?
You know, older 50s, 60s, whatever. But he plays it right. You know, he plays it very well. He doesn't sing or anything, but he's a very good guitar player. And I was at a thing. I wasn't really a part of a band or nothing, but he was. And we were talking. I was going to get up and play with Smiley Tillman. It was a thing out south. And I says, hey, his name is Thaddeus, I believe. Thaddeus. I go, Thad. You know, I really like what this is me talking to him. I said, I really like that you're a young guy and you play all this traditional stuff so well. I says, because most of these young guys think that this is the blues. I was giving an example. I go, purple rain, purple rain. And he goes, what the hell is that? I wanted to kiss the kid.
Right,
you know?
Right.
He didn't even know what the hell Friends was.
who plays with like Willie Buck and stuff,
yeah,
right?
You know
plays
what I mean?
Curly
yeah,
Key
yeah,
or
yeah, yeah, yeah. That's what I'm talking about.
Good kid.
Yeah, yeah, he's a good kid. Great kid. You know, wonderful kid.
So the good news is that there's some young people out there
that get it.
Playing the traditional stuff.
Yeah,
and get
they're
it,
far and few between.
And not playing.
Sadly, you know.
You know.
Yeah, sad. I could name them all on one hand.
Yeah.
You know? Sadly. But it's not because of their age. It's just, you know. It's what passes, you know. Oh God, I don't know what to tell you. How's this? Jimmy Reed is buried about a mile from my house. Okay, And I visit him regular.
Okay,
and Little Walter's buried about 2 miles from my house.
Yeah.
And I still visit him once in a while too. You know, is that important? To me, it is.
Yeah, and there should be monuments to those guys somewhere in the city of Chicago instead of, you know, monuments to, you know, football players.
No.
Right?
Well, no, but they have their place.
They do.
That's all great, too, you know. We'll go off on a tangent talking about football. But, you know, that's the American thing, man. Come on. Yeah.
I don't have anything against football.
No,
but
I don't either. You know, I don't have anything against anybody that wants to put their stuff on the line to prove a point, you know, because that's what makes America great, okay? A lot of people don't get that, okay? I'm just saying.
Well, you want to make some music?
Yeah, I think
let's
we could try it.
Yeah.
Oh, I like that little harp amp you got over there, man.
That's for my buddy Dino.
1, 2, 3.
Thank you.
don't find my baby, if it take both night and day. What a lonesome feeling, sleeping by yourself. What a lonesome feeling when you're sleeping by yourself. When the woman that you're loving has gone out with someone else. Wonder the reason why you're gonna let me, baby, but you left me here to cry. Blues with a feeling. Well, now, baby, that's what I had today. I've gotta find my dear sweet baby. If it take both night and day. Yeah, baby. See what we got here. Yeah, we talk about some blues and a feeling.